This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you news of the world. Tonight, Washington, Vandenberg clips the Republican Young Guard on aid to Europe. Paris, the Schuman government cracks down on Russians in France. London, the foreign ministers talk tough. Molotov gives an inch. The United Nations, straw vote on Palestine. Portland, Maine, New England fights back. Now a brief message from Tom Moore.
Well, how about it, friends? Everything all set for the big Thanksgiving feast tomorrow? Let's have a look at that market basket.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, there's the turkey, the sage for the dressing. There are the cranberries, there's the pumpkin for the pies, and oh, lots of other things that are going to develop into something mighty good to eat. Oh, yes, there's the Alka-Seltzer, too. Looks like the lady who did this shopping knew what she was doing. Chances are she's prepared many a Thanksgiving dinner, and she's watched the folks around her table forget their good judgment and eat too much than was wise for them. So this time, she's going to be prepared by having some Alka-Seltzer handy. Now, how about you? Is your home well supplied with Alka-Seltzer? Nothing quite like it, you know, when it comes to relief from occasional after-eating distress, such as may happen tomorrow. So why don't you be an extra good hostess and have plenty of Alka-Seltzer on hand for the comfort of your guests? Now, when you go to your drugstore for Alka-Seltzer, buy two packages instead of one. Always keep an extra package handy. Your druggist has Alka-Seltzer in 30 and 60-cent size packages. So get some tonight. Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
Chairman Milliken of the powerful Senate Conference of Republicans has just told News of the World, in effect, that President Truman might as well face it. He's not going to get direct rationing nor price control at the special session of Congress. Senator Milliken's exact words were, "There is no chance that price control or rationing will be considered." But he went on, "There is a possibility that some of the less controversial points in Mr. Truman's 10-point domestic control program may be considered before Christmas." The administration has not accepted the Milliken position as final, not publicly, that is. Secretary of Commerce Harriman again asked limited powers today to direct the flow of steel. Secretary of Agriculture Anderson renewed his plea for authority to control the currents of grain, fertilizer, farm machinery. Other administration spokesmen asked for power, even if they don't use it, to ration gasoline, coal, oil, in case voluntary methods fail this winter. Meanwhile, Republican Party leadership on Capitol Hill honored an old American custom today. They resolved the differences in the open by a count of noses. Eight Republicans, senators, made a direct assault on the Senate floor on Truman emergency aid to Europe. They tried to slash interim help for France, Italy, and Austria to $400 million. That would be a cut of almost $200 million. The young guardsmen were led by Senator Malone of Nevada, who charged that $400 million was enough to last until January the 1st and the regular session of Congress. Senator Vandenberg, the acknowledged Republican elder statesman on foreign affairs, led the fight to beat back the young guard. He realized that a similar attack is brewing in the House. The senator from Michigan said the Truman aid estimates had already been cut to the bone on the emergency level. "I know of no advantage," he added, "in throwing a 15-foot rope to a man that's drowning 20 feet from the shore." That did it. The Senate voted 56-30 to leave Truman aid for France, Italy, and Austria at $597 million. But Senator Vandenberg's ranks cracked under the strain. Senators Taft, Milliken, Wherry, all powerful Republicans, voted with the young guard. The House has not yet taken up this important legislation, except in committee, as we noted earlier. And today, Representative John Tabor of New York said the House Appropriations Committee cannot possibly get down to business on Truman aid before December the 4th. "We've got to know what we're shooting at," he said, after a visit with Mr. Truman, a visit designed probably to speed up congressional work on European recovery. Here are other rapid-fire developments on the foreign aid front. Senators Taylor of Idaho and Buck of Delaware, in a left-wing, right-wing team-up, suggested today government subsidies for landlords instead of further rent increases. "And why not?" Senator Taylor asked. "Everyone else is up to his armpits in the profiteering gravy bowl." And Representative Gwynn, the New York Republican, said his House Labor Subcommittee will propose legislation to curb slowdowns and feather bedding by organized labor and thus cut the cost of home building. J.L. Welch of the Omaha Grain Exchange warned Congress today that it would be unsafe to export more than 400 million bushels of the present available supply. The administration plans, you know, to ship out 500 million bushels, 100 million bushels more. And George A. Kublin of the Kansas City Board of Trade agreed with him. After a fashion, he said, "We should drag our feet a little bit to make sure there's enough of a grain carryover in the United States for next year." And Undersecretary of State Robert A. Lovett today warned Congress that They may be asked for more than $300 million for Greece. That's because of the pressure of inflation. But while we debate the future of Europe in relation to our own here in Washington, France sinks deeper toward economic dislocation. Here's Paul Archinard in Paris.
Anything can happen now, and Premier Schuman isn't joking when he refers to this distressing period of French national life. Today, the government answered union demands with offers which have been turned down, and communist union leaders are urging their followers to continue the strikes and to see that strike orders are enforced, all of which means that those who want to work will be urged not to do so. Any argument being good and no holds barred. Up in northwestern France, in the Calais-Boulogne region, for instance, flying squads of up to 1,000 men have been organized. They swoop down on shops which are still operating and quickly arrange matters so that no one can work there for some time. That's what Premier Schuman calls an abuse of the right to strike. The problem will be brought to the Assembly tomorrow afternoon when the new cabinet comes before that august but feverish body for the first time. It will then have a few more strikes to cope with, since they seem to be cropping up everywhere. Tomorrow, road transportation will come to a standstill as the truckers join the strike movement. Post office employees are terrified by extremist elements in their midst, and more offices are closed, while civil servants are getting ready to strike on Friday. And yet, there are still hardy souls to run a few trades. And it's to protect people like them and to assure liberty to work that the government has prepared important security measures. It is also weeding out and expelling Soviet citizens who show too much interest in French internal affairs. This is Paul Archinard in Paris.
The big four foreign ministers found themselves today in a 3-to-1 swivel over peace in Europe. Plain talk flew across the table like tomatoes in a farmyard free-for-all. Here's Merrill Muller in London.
Secretary of State George Marshall charged Foreign Minister Molotov tonight with disbelieving his own Russian propaganda as the Anglo-American negotiators met the first Soviet diatribe with humor and doubt in the current session of the Foreign Minister's Council here. I'm able to reveal exclusively to News of the World that from experience with Russian methods and by prearrangement, the Anglo-American ministers anticipated completely the details of the Russian charges of imperialism and warmongering and won a compromise order of agenda for their meetings. The big four foreign ministers finally accepted the French compromise of making the Austrian treaty the first item on the agenda and referring it immediately to the deputies who will report back December 2nd. Thereafter, the ministers agreed to discuss the problems of the German treaty with the stipulation that they pass over any stalemate. It came as no surprise that Molotov utilized nearly half of today's two-hour meeting by charging the Western powers with imperialist peace plans. This was all done with an embarrassed smile. Mr. Marshall replied immediately, saying he doubted Molotov believed his own charges. In this critical period, let's get down to work, Marshall said, instead of casting allegations for propaganda purposes. Ernest Bevin then brought out an old British document, deliberately selected for the occasion, because its reference to 8 basic freedoms clinched Marshall's arguments by enabling Bevin to compare Russian satellites with Anglo-American ideas of freedom and democracy. If we treat these charges with the humor they deserve, Bevin said, we may get more peace. All in all, it was a very friendly meeting. This is Merrill Muller in London.
Even in the field of American-Russian agreement on Palestine, trouble also boiled up today in the World Forum. Here's John McVane at the United Nations.
A maneuver by the Soviet-American majority, tonight postponed until Friday, a final assembly vote on establishing separate Jewish and Arab states in Palestine. After some 19 nations had given their views on Palestine petition, the chances of the UN plan were still in complete doubt. With evident behind-the-scenes action by the two great powers who favor a Jewish state, Assembly President Aranya announced he had 11 more speakers on the list. Then he asked Assembly opinion on whether to continue to drive toward a vote in the late session tonight or adjourn until Friday morning. Last year, Thanksgiving was not a UN holiday. The two-day delay will give the temporary Russo-American bloc a chance to try again to swing over one or two waverers who may make the difference in the two-thirds vote of approval needed for the Jewish state. The Arab countries, confident that tonight at least they could block final action, fought the decision to postpone, but they were defeated in a 25-21 vote and the assembly adjourned. Tonight the situation is still uncertain. Greece and the Philippine Republic swung over to the Arab side today. New Zealand, Holland, and Belgium came across to the Soviet-American view. The Arabs bitterly complained of lobbying against them, and all day the corridors and lounges have been buzzing with uncertainty and rumors. Nobody's pleased with the petition scheme, yet nobody sees anything better in view. And I don't feel the need to revise my last night's guess that the Jewish state will be established by about two votes. This is John McVane at the United Nations.
A few weeks ago, forest fires claimed many lives and $40 million in damage in New England. Today, that great section of the map on America is fighting back. Here's John Hogan of station WCSH, Portland, Maine.
The state of Maine has a lot to be thankful for tonight, 1 month after the worst forest fire disaster in its history. All of the 6,000 persons made homeless by the flames are adequately housed, either with friends and relatives or in new homes of their own provided by the Red Cross. No family is without shelter, and most of them have new furniture for the future, much of it donated by fellow citizens willing to lend a helping hand. More than 200,000 acres of forest land were burned over, but a report issued tonight by Governor Horace Hildreth shows that this represents less than 1% of the state's timber resources. Maine's industries were left almost intact. Four sawmills were the only industrial casualties. At Bar Harbor on Mount Desert Island, the famous resort town is rebuilding for a greater future. Nearly 500 permanent homes and summer estates were leveled and half of the town destroyed. But before the ashes were cool, town officials had set about the task of rebuilding the popular recreation center. City planner Harlan Bartholomew of St. Louis brought his staff to Bar Harbor at the request of millionaire John D. Rockefeller, Jr. Already the town has a new zoning law ready for adoption, and improved building regulations have been recommended by the planning board. Five double-unit dwellings are almost ready for occupancy by families who suffered most during the fires. As Chief Selectman Seth Libby puts it, we still have the mountains and water of Mount Desert Island and the morale of its people. The town is heading for a greater day of prosperity as one of the nation's popular resorts. This is John Hogan speaking, and that's what happened today in Bar Harbor.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. Did a busy day leave you feeling irritable and upset with a headache? If so, for fast relief, try a glass of sparkling Alka-Seltzer. Since Alka-Seltzer is completely dissolved before you take it, the pain-relieving agent's ready to go right to work. And because of its effervescent base, Alka-Seltzer gets there faster, gives relief quicker. Just try it and see. Now remember, your druggist has Alka-Seltzer in 30 and 60 cent size packages.
When you buy vitamins, get the greatest value for your money. Listen.
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins.
Yes, penny for penny, one-a-day brand multiples give you more milligrams of vitamins than any other nationally known brand of multiple vitamins sold by your druggist. Each one-a-day brand multiple capsule contains all the vitamins for which requirements have been established in human nutrition. Dependable for strength, purity, quality, and...
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Now here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here are signs of our times. Boston. Mayor James M. Curley of Boston was released from federal prison today, 1 month short of his minimum term for mail fraud. He received a commutation from President Truman, as expected. Last night, we gave the jury side of the case, namely, that Mayor Curley was found guilty of taking suckers who wanted Washington contracts for something like $60,000, along with three other men. Here's the mayor's side. He loses none of his civil rights and steps back into the mayor's shoes of his home city. He says he was wrongfully deprived of his personal liberty. He was the victim of a confidence man himself, and absolutely innocent. The release from prison was based on a doctor's certificate that Mayor Curley is suffering from a heart condition. He looked pale and haggard when he left prison. Ketchikan, Alaska, the Coast Guard has found four men alive and three men dead aboard the wrecked Army transport Clarksdale Victory off Little Hippa Island. The other 44 members of the crew were carried to their deaths. The Coast Guard suspects when the stern half of the ship broke off, they died. Rome, Italy. The Italian rightist and independent press reports, from what it says are trustworthy sources, that nationwide strikes are being planned for Italy and France for December the 1st. One newspaper, the Independent Espresso, that is expressed to us, says the disorders that have claimed 24 lives in the last 2 weeks in Italy were a specific plan by communist leaders on orders of the Cominform. Communists in Italy ridicule the report. And that, until tomorrow at this same time, is News of the World. This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from Washington. This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, bringing you News of the World Night Special. Tonight, Washington exclusive preview of the Marshall Plan by detail. London, by-election with a meaning all its own. Vancouver, drama and tragedy on the shores of the Pacific Northwest. Hollywood, preview of Santa Claus. Special report, more scandal in high places. Those are the headlines. I'll be back in a moment with News of the World.
How about it, friends? Everything all set for the big Thanksgiving feast tomorrow? Well, let's have a look at that market basket.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a turkey. And the sage for the dressing. There are the cranberries. There's the pumpkin for the pies. And, oh, lots of other things that are going to develop into something mighty good to eat. Oh, yes, there's the Alka-Seltzer, too. Looks like the lady who did this shopping knew what she was doing. Chances are she's prepared many a Thanksgiving dinner, and she's watched the folks around her table forget their good judgment, eat too much than was wise for them. So this time, she's going to be prepared by having Alka-Seltzer handy. Now, how about you? Is your home well supplied with Alka-Seltzer? Nothing quite like it, you know, when it comes to relief from occasional after-eating distress, such as may happen tomorrow. So be an extra good hostess, lady, and have plenty of Alka-Seltzer on hand for the comfort of your guests. Now, when you go to your drugstore for Alka-Seltzer, buy two packages instead of one, and always keep an extra package handy. Your druggist has Alka-Seltzer in 30 and 60 cent size packages, so get some tonight. Now, Alka-Seltzer brings you the noted commentator, author, and reporter, Morgan Beatty.
The special edition of News of the World presents tonight a complete preview of the long-range Marshall Plan nearly a week before it goes to Congress. The overall plan, as advertised, is $16 to $20 billion spread over 4 years. Now, the breakdown. Emergency aid between December the 1st and March the 31st, $597 million for France, Italy, and Austria. That's the $597 million you're hearing about these days. $500 million to cover the additional cost of occupation of Germany until March the 31st. We're shouldering some or most of Britain's obligations in Germany, and $60 million interim aid to China. Add them up, and the total of emergency aid, that is only to March the 31st, by official estimate is $2,657,000,000 up to, as we said, April the 1st next year. But from April the 1st to 1948 to June 30th, 1949, Truman or Marshall aid will be proposed next week by the President to the tune of $7.5 billion. About half of this will be in the form of outright grants to the 16 nations of Western Europe. There will be $300 million for China, a stopgap sum. Now, what about the 3 years following, from mid-1949 to mid-1951? The administration will not draw up a detailed blueprint beyond 18 months for the simple and understandable reason that guessing about crops, prosperity, or the lack of them beyond that period is definitely, as they say in the current movie, is definitely fun and fancy-free. There will be a principle, however, and a few financial conditions attached. The principle is this. The 16 nations of Western Europe must show, after the first year, that their demands on the United States for help are on a descending scale. That is, that they're taking hold themselves and will, if they follow their own schedule and ours, they'll be out of hock, or rather they'll stop going into hock to Uncle Sam in 4 years' time. So, roughly, the 16 nations must show that they can get along on $5 billion the second year, say, $2.5 to $3 billion the third, and $1.5 billion or so in the fourth year. So much for principle. Now for conditions. We would insist on a multilateral agreement among all the 16 powers to carry out these conditions and the overall agreement. Then we would have unilateral agreements, that is, agreements country by country or treaties to cover any funds sent to each country. And as a further condition, the United States expects to police all grants given to European countries, that is, to see to it that money granted for food is not in turn used to inflate the currencies of the receiving country. Now, what about all this money? Will it really accomplish the purpose? Will Italy, France, and the other nations of Western Europe get back on their feet? I've asked many an expert in Washington this question. I've asked them for you. The best answer I can get is that it's a gamble, pure and simple. We may not win. Again, we may. The chances are that we will not do any better than 50-50. But if we don't make the investment, there'll be chaos in a vacuum, and into that vacuum will step Soviet Russia. You pay your money, or you take your chances. And in this situation, the Truman administration has cast the die for better or for worse. Tonight, an administration spokesman tells News of the World that the administration must tell the American public between now and the first of the year, certainly before next spring, that we're going to have to make a sacrifice in our daily lives to meet the deliveries to Europe in case we decide to make them. Sorry to cover so much unexciting material tonight, but there it is, and it's something that's not above and beyond you and me. What we eat and buy and how we live in the years to come, all of these are intimately tied up with European recovery. Now for our on-the-spot news coverage around the world. First, to Britain. Here's Henry Cassidy in London.
A town called Gravesend, a riverside industrial community of 60,000 citizens at the mouth of the Thames, has taken public attention here, at least temporarily, away from the Council of Foreign Ministers. Gravesend held a by-election to fill its vacant seat in the House of Commons, and being an average English town, its vote was considered an important test of the Labour government and the Conservative opposition. The result was expected 2 hours ago, but because of the heavy vote brought out by the campaign of leaders from both sides and the close contest between the two, the count has not yet been completed. Depending on how it goes, the result will be taken either as a demand for an end to the post-war austerity of the Labour government or as support for its socialist program. The Council of Foreign Ministers, after two meetings, now has an agenda. The Big Four have agreed on the items they should discuss and the order in which they should be taken. The Austrian treaty comes first, a concession by Soviet Foreign Minister Molotov, but actually this item goes to the deputies, and next comes the German peace treaty, a concession by Secretary of State Marshall. The agreement was reached only after bitter words from Molotov about imperialism that were quickly dismissed by the others. All four delegations tonight have been dusting off the old speeches they have already made in London, Paris, and Moscow about Germany. You'll hear them for the next 10 days or so, and then comes the really critical period of the conference. This is Henry Cassidy in London.
Now to the far west of America and Canada for two stories. To British Columbia for a ship disaster off the storm-raked shores of the Pacific Northwest, and to Hollywood for a preview of Christmas. First, to Dennis Sweeting of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation at Vancouver, British Columbia.
On Monday night, Canada's wild and dangerous west coast claimed its latest victims. The American transport Clarksdale Victory went aground on lonely, uninhabited Hippa Island. It's about 125 air miles from Prince Rupert, 150 from Ketchikan in Alaska, and 500-odd from Vancouver. A little while ago, I talked to Captain Elford, port warden at Prince Rupert, and he told me what those near the spot think must have happened. She went aground between 10 and 11 Monday night. A high sea ran, and there wouldn't have been a chance in the world of safely launching a lifeboat. Ships headed for the scene, but they couldn't approach her, and they couldn't get a man ashore. When they arrived, the vessel was submerged, except for her forecastle. A plane reported three men on shore, but Captain Elford told me that everyone doubted that if the men were there, they could be from the vessel. A party of British Columbia Provincial Police, led by Indian guides, headed across the Queen Charlotte Islands to approach by land. Yesterday morning in Vancouver, men of the Canadian Army waited to fly to the island. Weather prevented it. Today the waves have died down, and men of the American Coast Guard climbed on the wreck. There they found four men alive, suffering terribly from exposure, but still alive. And with them were four others dead. A small search party's been put ashore, and it found nothing. There's little hope that any of the rest of the 51 men on the Clarksdale Victory will be found. The sea has claimed them for its own. This is Dennis Sweeting of the CBC in Vancouver, British Columbia, and now to David Anderson in Hollywood.
It's the night before Thanksgiving, and all through Movie Land, the word has got around that Santa Claus has come to town. Even that bad widow boy, Junior, found out about it, and Red Skelton dooed it again. He just threw a tremendous master switch to turn on the greatest concentration of light ever seen in a nighttime parade. I'm standing on the famous terrace at Hollywood's Radio City at Sunset and Vine. As Red threw that switch, the most famous movie and radio stars in the world congregated before me to start their annual parade of stars down Hollywood Boulevard. Beautiful Alice Faye managed to push by Red and snip a ribbon of picture film to start the annual march down Santa Claus Lane, a lane which is one gigantic ribbon of light and color. Huge Christmas trees with reds and blues and greens in great profusion, every storefront in its best Christmas dress, and from the way it looks from here, everyone in Southern California lining the curb, more than a million persons. Each star in this Santa parade has his own float. There's Skelton tearing up his home with saw and hatchet, pursued by his long-suffering mother. He wants to scramble off to see Santa Claus, but Santa has his own troubles. He has to ride with Jack Benny, and if Benny never rides again, he admits his beautiful float is far better than his old Maxwell ever was. And scrambling off his float up here to a microphone is Ralph Edwards, the man who knows. Ralph, what's on your mind?
Second for Santa Claus, first for me, 13 for wreath, 7 for tree. Bring me an auto, a book, and a ball, and I'll say Merry Christmas in spring, not in fall.
Thank you, Ralph Edwards. Right before me is Fibber McGee and Molly on a replica of 79 Wistful Vista. Down a bit further, I see Eddie Cantor, President Cantor, if you please. He's all by himself on a miniature of the Capitol building in Washington. And by gosh, I see everybody wants to get into the act. At the tail end of the parade is Jimmy Durante playing the piano under a giant Christmas bell. This is David Anderson in Hollywood.
The trail of dishonesty in high places in the backwash of war led tonight straight to the Army and Air Force lists of officers who have received medical discharges since VJ Day. Major General Harry Vaughan, the President's aide, opened up the touchy question by direction of Mr. Truman himself. He sent a letter today to Secretary of Defense James Forrestal, ordering him to hand over the names of all officers who hold a medical discharge. General Vaughan said any legitimate disability will not be questioned. But he knows of one officer who holds a medical discharge and at the same time is holding down a $75,000 job in civilian life. If a man is handicapped, said the general, to the extent that he gets tax-free disability pay, he's not worth $75,000 to private industry. And reporter Jerry Green, able reporter Jerry Green in the Washington Times Herald reports that 364 generals are now getting disability pay tax-free. And News of the World can report to you exclusively that this trail of possible dishonesty was opened up by Senator Ferguson in the case of General Benny Myers, who received a medical discharge while also piling up profits pyramided on wartime investments. Senator Ferguson asked General Myers several questions in his hearings about pay and how he got a medical discharge. President Truman apparently studied the record and asked at once, before the Senate War Investigating Committee got back to the trail, for reports. And there are reports in Washington unverified tonight that some officers, a few anyway, got their disability tax-free medical discharges by the civil expedient of a telephone call to a hospital. And that's what happened in Washington today.
Morgan Beatty will return with some more late news. Did a busy day leave you feeling irritable and upset with a headache? If so, for fast relief, try a glass of sparkling Alka-Seltzer. Since Alka-Seltzer is completely dissolved before you take it, the pain-relieving agent's ready to go right to work. And because of its effervescent base, Alka-Seltzer gets there faster, gives relief quicker. Just try it and see. Remember, your druggist has Alka-Seltzer in 30 and 60 cent size packages.
When you buy vitamins, get the greatest value for your money. Listen.
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins.
Yes, penny for penny, one-a-day brand multiples give you more milligrams of vitamins than any other nationally known brand of multiple vitamins sold by your druggist. Each one-a-day brand multiple capsule contains all the vitamins for which requirements have been established in human nutrition. Dependable for strength, purity, quality, and...
Penny for penny, you get more milligrams of vitamins when you buy one-a-day brand multiple vitamins. Now, here again is Morgan Beatty.
And here are signs of our times. New York, James C. Petrillo has lifted a musicians' union ruling that has prevented the use of musicians on cooperative radio network programs. The ruling provided that in every such case, a standby musician had to be hired in every city where the program was heard. Standbys will not have to be hired any longer. Hollywood, RKO Studios has announced that producer Adrian Scott and director Edward Dimitrik have been dismissed because they refused to tell the Congressional Un-American Activities Committee whether or not they were communists. Montgomery, Alabama. Michigan has captured two convicts who escaped from Alabama. She's returning one and keeping the other, a chap named Virgil O. Miller, because he also escaped some time ago from a Michigan prison. Alabama prison director Frank Boswell is all smiles. This fellow Miller, he says, can eat 25 to 35 biscuits at a meal and devour other food in like proportion. We're mighty proud to let Michigan have him until the high cost of living comes down, and that's the news of the world. This is Morgan Beatty speaking for Alka-Seltzer, saying goodbye from the newsroom in Washington.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.